From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. When they meet in Baltimore next week, America's Catholic bishops will make another run at establishing how bishops should be held accountable in the clerical sex abuse crisis. Baltimore's archdiocese has set up a system where complaints of wrongdoing go to a third party for review. David Lorenz of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests says the church cannot be trusted to investigate itself. Archbishop William Laurie tells us allegations of criminal misconduct are reported to police and then the church investigates.
Our investigation is not to determine whether or not a crime has been committed. Our investigation, which follows the police investigation, is designed to determine whether or not a person is fit to stay in ministry.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The U.S. Catholic bishops will gather again in Baltimore next week to resume their deliberations over how bishops should be held accountable in the clerical sex abuse crisis. There's a new example in the headlines this morning. Former West Virginia Bishop Michael Bransfield, accused of both financial and sexual improprieties. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we have a link to the Washington Post investigation, which broke after we interviewed Baltimore Archbishop William Laurie yesterday afternoon. You'll hear Laurie describe new systems for holding bishops accountable, but they were not in place when the church's investigation of Bransfield, which Laurie led, began last fall. What they have in common is relying on lay people to do the investigating. Before we spoke with Archbishop Laurie, and before details of the Bransfield probe were public, I spoke with David Lorenz, Maryland State Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, SNAP, about the church's credibility in policing its own. I asked him what he would like to see from the American bishops when they meet.
What I'd like them to do is open their records, and I don't mean just hand over their records. I mean open their doors to investigators. There are attorney generals in many, many states right now that are doing investigations. Some of them haven't been subpoenaed. The recent one in Texas, you know, they call it a quote-unquote raid of the diocesan headquarters, and they found documents. You know, the diocese said they handed it over all the documents, and when the raid happened, they found a lot more documents. So those are the things so when I ask the diocese to open their records, I mean open the doors and let the police come in and look at everything that's available. I don't really trust the church to do anything right at this point anymore, especially given what they did here in Maryland for the latest legislative session.
When you say that you don't trust them in Maryland, especially because of the latest legislative session, tell us what that means.
Okay, so during this last legislative session, we attempted to change the statute of limitations and eliminate the statute of limitations completely for child sexual abuse. This wasn't just a child sexual abuse by clergy. It was general. It was in general. We tried to eliminate the statute of limitations because we all know that it takes children an average of 46 years to come forward. That's an average. That's not the maximum. That's an average. Right now, the statute of limitations is 25, and the three dioceses that represent Maryland, that would be the Washington Diocese, the Baltimore Diocese, and the Diocese of Wilmington, Delaware. They all have regions within their diocese that are part of Maryland. They said they made the announcement they are not going to take a position on this. And it's the first time they've ever said that. We've tried to do this many times before. The church has always opposed it. And in fact, we found out that behind the scenes, they were, in fact, taking a position. They were fighting it vigorously. They hired a multi-million dollar law firm to come up with a position paper on why this legislation was unconstitutional. What we found out was in 2017, there was a last-minute amendment that was put in that changed child sexual abuse to be covered under statute of repose instead of statute of limitations. And that made all the difference in the world. And that little change made it impossible to retroactively change child sexual abuse. And that made it unconstitutional. So that position paper was, in fact, legitimate, but they had put in a poison pill back in 2017. So they are as sneaky and as underhanded and as dirty as any organization can possibly be. When they did that, they knew what they were doing. They changed the statute of limitations, the statute of repose on child sexual abuse. And in so doing, they locked out every victim of child sexual abuse from being able to get justice and retribution for what they've suffered from. And not just the clergy, not just clergy abuse, but everybody, every victim.
That's David Lorenz, Maryland State Director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. In January, Archbishop Laurie announced that he was putting in place a system of third-party reporting to handle complaints that might be lodged against bishops, complaints, say, of cover-up that might be lodged against bishops in the Archdiocese of Baltimore. And your reaction to that?
My reaction to that is I don't think we should be reporting to independent lay review boards. We should not be reporting complaints to the diocese. We should not be reporting complaints to anybody within the church. One, I don't trust them. I don't believe what they say. Two, they're unqualified. They are not qualified to carry out an investigation. Who's qualified to carry out an investigation? Well, the police are. We don't ask police to give theological opinions, and we don't ask bishops to carry out investigations. We don't ask lawyers to give medical opinions, and we don't ask doctors to give financial advice, do we? We go to the experts. So the idea is that if you have a complaint that needs to be investigated, you should not be going to the diocese and say, please investigate this. You should be going to the police and say, I have a complaint and I want you to investigate. It was child sexual abuse and you need to investigate it. So go do that. This review board looks good to people. So they say, oh, they have a review board. I'll go to them. I have this complaint and I'm sure they'll investigate. And in fact, they're not capable of it. And we know that. We know that from the Pennsylvania grand jury. Sometimes, even if they have goodwill, and I suspect that's not necessarily the case, but let's assume they have goodwill. They just do not have the tools and the resources and the training to carry out an investigation like that.
One of the things that's different since the last time the American bishops met in November is that the Pope has issued a law for the Universal Church about the basics of how sex abuse allegations should be handled. What is your impression of what the Pope did?
You know, on the surface, it looks good. But again, we've had Pope say lots of things. We had Pope John Paul II do the Dallas Charter, and we know the Dallas Charter wasn't followed. That was back in 2002. There was no enforcement of the Dallas Charter by the Vatican. So, actions speak much louder than words, and the action is they don't follow up. So I don't care what the church says anymore. I don't care if they say all the right things, because they've said some right things in the past, and they don't even follow those. So why would I believe that they're going to follow anything that they ever say?
David, I really appreciate your sharing these thoughts with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Lorenz is the Maryland State Director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break, and then we'll speak with Baltimore Archbishop William Laurie. Stay with us.
On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. When the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops gathers in the oldest American diocese next week, the conversation will center on how to ensure accountability in handling allegations of sex abuse and cover-ups in the church. Their host, Archbishop William Laurie, has set up a system that some other bishops are looking at, And Archbishop Laurie joins me now. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thank you very much, Sheila.
I want to ask you about the structures you have set up for reporting allegations of abuse and cover-ups. But let me ask you first about the kind of frustration that we heard from David Lorenz, which I think mirrors at least some other survivors of this crisis. How do you connect with them when they say they don't believe anything the church says?
There's no doubt about it. One of the outcomes, one of the results of the sexual abuse crisis has been a loss of trust and a loss of confidence. I think that's one of the tragedies. It doesn't begin to compare with the suffering of victim survivors, but it is certainly there. I think that the only way to address that is to continually try to do the right thing for the right reason. And even if you're not believed for a while, you just keep at it. You just try to keep open the lines of dialogue, and you pray that these bonds of trust might someday be re-knit and restored. And you have to keep on taking the right steps, whether or not everybody thinks you're doing the right thing.
Well, in January, you established a third-party independent reporting system for allegations against Baltimore area bishops. What does that mean, and how does it work?
So we've already, actually for some years, had a third-party independent reporting system for allegations of sexual abuse. It's called Ethics Point. And the number, the way of getting hold of Ethics Point is published on the website. It's a very publicly accessible piece of information. But we didn't...
Ethics Point is like a portal, like an online way of reporting?
It's an online portal for reporting. And it doesn't come to a diocesan office. It goes to this third-party system. And that ensures that the report is actually made and communicated, and there's a record of it. In the case of bishops, we have four bishops serving in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, myself and three auxiliaries. And so when a report is received at Ethics Point about one of us, if it should be received, it does not go from Ethics Point to any office in the chancery, because we're responsible for those offices. Instead, it goes to two retired judges on the independent review board that has been set up to review every case that the Archdiocese handles with regard to the sexual abuse of minors.
Retired judges from civil courts?
Yes, civil judges.
And lay people.
They are lay persons, yes, a man and a woman. And these two judges will evaluate the claim, the allegation, and then it will be their job to report it first to law enforcement and then to the papal nuncio, who is more or less my direct report as a bishop in the United States.
He's like the Pope's representative.
Yes.
He's like the Pope's ambassador.
He's the Pope's ambassador in Washington. And only then would the bishop be informed of these allegations. What that does is that the allegation is already being dealt with. And as a bishop, I would have no opportunity to suppress it or to interfere with it or to prevent it from being reported. That's the idea behind this.
How does what you are doing in Baltimore compare to the worldwide church law that Pope Francis just promulgated about handling sexual abuse cases?
Much of what is in that motu proprio, that set of guidelines, has already been implemented in the United States in 2002 in the Dallas charter and in the norms.
The Dallas Charter is...
And that's what the bishops enacted in Dallas in 2002 to set up a whole system for reporting and preventing the sexual abuse of minors and for reaching out to victims. And that has been pretty effective. That's certainly caused the number of new cases of sexual abuse to diminish to almost nothing and has created a culture of awareness about sexual abuse throughout the church. So far, so good. But I think it has become very apparent, especially since last summer, that much more needs to be done with regard to Episcopal accountability. What this new set of...
Accountability of bishops.
The accountability of bishops, yes. So in other words, we should be held responsible, just like anybody else in the church, for any acts of abuse or harassment that we commit. And if we fail to handle allegations of abuse or harassment correctly, we should also be held accountable for that as well. And so the new set of guidelines the Pope just issued gives us a general framework and gives us sort of the green light to do now what we had wanted to do in November. And that's, but our job is to apply it to the culture and laws and situation of our own country. And so in the intervening months, the proposals that were set forth in November have been refined and improved, and they will be now voted on by the bishops next week when they are here in Baltimore.
That's Roman Catholic Archbishop William Lowry here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the sex abuse crisis in the church, what's being done about it in Maryland, and what American bishops may do when they gather here next week. I had the impression that, just from the reading I've done about the Pope's document, I don't pretend that I have read it, mm-hmm. even in translation, but I had the impression it was a different approach than the bishops were about to take last November.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because what we ended up with in November were two different approaches. One would have been to create a national commission, and the other one was to adopt what is called the metropolitan model. That is to say, a metropolitan is basically an archbishop who is in charge of an archdiocese, like me. So I'm a metropolitan. But what the metropolitan model does is it tasks the archbishop, the metropolitan archbishop, to conduct an investigation against one of his suffragan bishops, the bishops under him in his province, when there is an allegation of sexual abuse or sexual harassment or maybe any other kind of significant misbehavior. The archbishop is directed in this document to make use of qualified lay people who have the expertise to conduct such an investigation, much as I've done in West Virginia. And then
there's an allegation against a bishop there.
Against the former bishop of West Virginia. And then what happens is that with the help of these lay experts, the bishop draws up a preliminary report and sends that to the Vatican. And the Vatican will do further investigation. It is ultimately the Pope who will make the decision about what ought to happen to the bishop against whom the allegations have been made.
One of the criticisms I've heard read from survivors groups about
the Pope's promulgation is that it does not require that allegations be reported to civil authorities, to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. How does that compare with your approach?
First of all, let me just observe that it might not. I'm speculating a bit here. It might not include that provision because it is a set of guidelines meant for the whole world, and there are places in the world where a bishop can't go outside without being fearful of being captured and killed. So, reporting allegations to regimes that are manifestly unjust is a problem. We don't have that problem here, but that does exist in some parts of the world. In the United States, we have long since mandated for all dioceses that all allegations are reported to civil authorities, since 2002 at least. And what I have done since November was to make sure that by this third-party independent reporting system and the use of these two retired judges, these allegations would be reported to civil authorities before I, as a bishop, would even know about them.
What about the argument that we heard from David Lorenz that all the investigations should be by civil authorities, that it is not in your expertise to do that kind of investigation? That's not the church's expertise.
This is what our protocols call for. When we receive an allegation of sexual abuse, we report it immediately to civil authorities. And we don't do any kind of an investigation until after the police have done their investigation. Our investigation is not to determine whether or not a crime has been committed. Our investigation, which follows the police investigation, is designed to determine whether or not a person is fit to stay in ministry or should suffer some canonical penalty. And even that investigation is reviewed, as I mentioned earlier, by an independent review board, which is made up of people like retired judges, former police commissioners, people in the behavioral sciences. So we do not do an investigation to determine criminal activity. We leave that to the civil authorities to do because that is their job.
The revelations about former Washington Cardinal Theodore McCarrick last summer, decades of alleged sexual misconduct, shocked the church. Mm-hmm. Pope Francis defrocked him, but many in the church are still troubled that there hasn't been a full disclosure of who knew about his activities as he rose in the hierarchy. Do you expect American bishops to push for answers to that?
Yes, and not only will we have already done so. I don't know what every bishop in the country thinks, but the bishops whom I know well and speak with often all want this to happen.
Can you tell me in a nutshell what you expect the headline to be then from next week's meeting of the bishops?
What I hope people will come away with is that the bishops are putting into place a national third-party system of independent reporting. Number two, that the bishops are making a good faith effort to hold themselves accountable for any misbehavior or malfeasance and to be as accountable or more accountable than anyone else in the church. And number three, that we have bound ourselves to the same code of conduct that everyone else is bound to in the church and more commonly in civil society. That's what I hope people will understand. I don't expect everyone to applaud it. I think the time for applause is long since over. I don't expect it not to be criticized. It will be criticized. Criticism is not all bad. It helps us oftentimes to sharpen and improve our focus. Anyone who's dealt with this terrible thing called sexual abuse of minors understands that it is a really hard thing to get a hold of, to deal with adequately. And anybody that says, we got it down to a science, has only fooled themselves. This is something we have to continually review, look at, and improve. This is what we'll do next week, not the last word. What we did in Dallas in 2002, not the last word. The only honest response is to say we'll do the best we can at any given moment in time. We have to recognize that we have to continually review and improve what we are doing.
Archbishop Lurie, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Most welcome.
William Lurie has been Baltimore's Archbishop since 2012. Last fall, Pope Francis assigned him to investigate allegations of financial irregularities and sexual improprieties by former West Virginia Bishop Michael Bransfield, whom Lurie removed from ministry last March. Unlike the news system Lurie described to us, those allegations were not reported to police, and a police investigation was not completed first. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to the Washington Post's report on the Bransfield case. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us on the record. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.